Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. Ben Trueblood here alongside John Paul Basham.
Yo.
Thank you for choosing to listen to this podcast. I know you have a lot of options for your podcast listening in student ministry and just general. So thanks for taking the time to find this podcast and jump in with us. I hope the discussion benefits you and helps you as a student ministry leader. Remember, the purpose of the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast is to provide both practical and philosophical student ministry content to help you grow as a leader and in your involvement in student ministry. So we want to encourage you. We want to challenge you along the way. We have guests in that we want to bring their insight to you as well. So if you're new to the podcast, that's us in a nutshell. And off we go with today's topic. We're going to be discussing myths of student ministry. Myths of student ministry.
There it is again, just in case you missed it the first time.
I felt like the word myth, since it's in there, it required an extra emphasis.
You could even do like the echo.
Yeah, the myths. Kind of like that.
I like that.
So I don't know. It just felt like a word that needed extra emphasis for some reason. So I think of mythical creatures when I think of myths.
I do like a mythical creature.
What is your favorite mythical creature?
Well, the one that comes to mind right now is the mythical griffin.
What theme park is that from?
Busch Gardens.
Yes.
Prepare to witness the power and speed of the mythical griffin.
And it says it like every 5 minutes as you stand in the longest line ever.
Yep.
I was Googling myths that exist in the world as a preparation for this podcast. And I thought what I was going to get was like Bigfoot or the unicorn or things like that. I did not get that.
That's because those are true.
They've got those TV shows where dudes think that there are big feet running around out in the woods. Like they set up traps and videos and all that kind of stuff. I don't think that a Bigfoot is real.
I've never thought about what a plural of Bigfoot would be if you have a herd of big feet. There's a bunch of Bigfoots over there.
Would it be big feets? Was that right? Big footin'?
The big footin' is it? It's in the wood. It's in the woods and is it?
That's right. We've Brian Regan that one real fast. Maybe it's like deer where it's just there's a herd of Bigfoot.
That sounds best.
Yeah, it's probably that. I didn't get that though when I searched. Instead, I got like scientific stuff. Which I want to put a couple of these before you as our podcast audience today and before you, John Paul. I want to tell you some of these myths.
I'm ready.
Because these are things that I was told as a child. They're things, some of them, that I have said to my own children that I believed to be absolutely true. And these people are arguing that they are not true, which of course is what a myth is.
You can't believe everything that you read on the interwebs.
That's right. So the definition of a myth is a widely held but false belief. So our topic today is myths of student ministry. So we're going to give you some widely held beliefs about student ministry that are not true. But I just have to talk about some of these other things first.
I think you should.
If you swallow chewing gum, it will stay in your stomach for 7 years. Were you told that as a child?
Yes, but I've always thought that one was dumb. It's like, listen, nothing is going to stay in your stomach for 7 years.
No, there's some stuff that doesn't stay in there for 7 minutes. So you got to believe that chewing gum isn't going to stay that long. But I was told that all the time. And so at the recording of this podcast, this week in my life at home, we don't give our kids gum a whole lot, but sometimes when Kristen's at the store or whatever, she'll get them a pack of gum as like a special treat because they ask for it all the time. So this week was one of those times. and Josiah ate his entire pack of gum the same night.
A pack?
Yes. It was like one of those, I think it's like Trident or whatever, where it's double stacked in the flip-top box, but it's the little, it's not like the long, big red pieces.
Yeah.
Big red. Do people do that anymore? Or is it like, who's this old guy eating big red? I may have just dated myself on the gum. But anyway, he ate the whole thing. The whole pack.
Now, see, that could be an issue. I could see a legitimate blockage there.
We asked him, did you swallow all of them? He said, no, not all of them. How many did you swallow? Probably 11 or 13. I was like, what? I think he swallowed all of them.
Yeah.
But it, apparently that's a myth that you, it's not going to stay in your stomach 7 years.
Yeah.
So that's one that we would say we agree on.
That's an easy one.
What about carrots improve your vision? Did you get told that as a child?
See, that one just makes me mad.
So you were told.
I was not only was I told that, but my mom had this run about a couple of years long where she would wake up before I did so that she could blend up carrots, and she would make me drink carrot juice several mornings a week.
How old were you?
High school. I'm a high school kid.
Eating blended up carrots.
Carrot juice. And there's no like sugar in it or anything. It's just, here's a glass of pureed carrots. Drink this down. And every time I was like, Mom, stop. Stop it.
Because it helps your vision.
Yeah.
It doesn't. This was a product of World War II propaganda, when the British Army claimed that the reason its soldiers had great night vision was because they ate their carrots. In reality, they all had radar in their aircraft. So how about that one? We just have radar.
So explain to me. I feel like we have to think through the rationale here. You know, this piece of propaganda, as people are sitting around in the room coming up with war strategy.
Right.
What's the deal here? Is this war propaganda, or is this carrot farmers trying to sell more carrots?
Maybe both. Like, I don't know if they were the first. I don't know. Maybe they had better radar than the enemies.
Yeah. Are they trying to hide technology?
Maybe.
Or
I don't
sell
know.
Carrots?
I don't know.
If they're trying to hide technology, that's just ridiculous. Like, whose idea was that?
Yeah, carrots. All right, so producer Nathan has just passed along another important piece of information in this discussion. How a ruse to keep German pilots confused gave the vitamin A-rich vegetable too much credit. So that is what it was. It was, how about producer Nathan on the spot research, by the way?
Did that work?
Well,
were the Germans like all disappointed and
das
defeated?
Carrots. That's what they said. They started jumping in with the carrots. Here's what it worked to do.
If you don't put a few carrots in my rucksack, we're going to lose this war.
That's right. Here's what it worked to do. It helped your mom to feed you pureed carrots. So the myth lasted. I mean, there are still probably people who hear that as children right now.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Touching a toad will give you warts. Did you ever hear that?
No.
I heard it. It's not true, according to this.
Did you believe it?
I think there was a time in my life where I believed it. Toad's skin is covered in warts itself, but you cannot get warts from it.
I mean, a wart is never contagious, right?
They're not.
I mean, if you touch a person's wart, will you get a wart?
I'm not trying to touch warts in any situation. But this is saying that's just to help the toad blend into its environment. But I don't know if I've thought warts are contagious. So here's another one that I know there may be some disagreement on this one. Scientifically, this is what they're saying. But here's this myth. Sugar causes children to be hyperactive. So the again, a statement of belief that is actually false. So what they're saying is sugar does not cause children to be hyperactive.
Yeah, and so looking into this one, they talk about, okay, if it's chocolate, then the caffeine can get a kid worked up.
Right. It's not the sugar, it's the caffeine.
Which makes sense. All I know is that I got a 3- and 4-year-old, and if we go out to go get an ice cream from Andy's one evening after dinner, my 3-year-old will not sleep.
Chocolate or no?
Vanilla ice cream. I mean, any ice cream, when we go out to get ice cream, we always have to think before. We're going to eat dinner a little bit early so yeah. we can get to the ice cream place in enough time for him to eat it and play a while before he gets in the bed.
This is one, like, I would say the same. Like, they make the scientific argument that, like, it sugar is sent to muscles and internal organs and stored for use later and all this stuff, and I get the scientific side of it, but having kids that eat sugar sometimes, I have seen the hyperactivity come into play. So I don't know what that is, but
me either.
This is one that I'm going to say isn't accurate.
Maybe they're just overwhelmed with joy. Maybe it's an endorphin thing. Like, I'm happy, excited about the dessert.
Yeah.
And all the chemicals get pumping and then you're just wound up.
Maybe so.
Joy infusion. I mean, that is a pretty good joy infusion. A big old cup of ice cream.
Yeah.
Make me happy.
The last one that I would mention, because this is one I've said before, is that watching TV will ruin your eyesight. I've used it in terms of sitting too close to the TV.
Yeah.
But it might give you a headache and it might cause fatigue, but it will not cause irreparable damage to your eyes.
Which is good.
It is good because I like to play games and that involves a TV or a screen. So my eyes aren't going to be destroyed by it.
Yeah.
And neither are my kids. So that brings us to, and some of you are saying, finally, the student ministry part of the podcast today, where we're going to talk about myths of student ministry. So once again, just so you have the definition in your mind, a widely held but false belief. A widely held but false belief. And the first one of these is that if you build it, they will come. And so a little bit of explanation for that is leaning into, man, if I just have the most hype, the best events, the biggest show in town, then I will have a great student ministry. And that's what will be what puts me on the map, so to speak, or puts my student ministry on the map. And that it's all centered around the hype train.
Yeah. Well, and in a lot of churches, maybe you're thinking, you know, oh man, if we only had a student center, if we only had like a building dedicated to us, man, it'd be full of kids, you know, literally building the space dedicated to students. That is not the key to getting students engaged and plugged in to your ministry.
Yeah. And I think a point there to make is that, like, the goal in student ministry really isn't to just get them there, right? Like, we want to take them somewhere, and you want to put them on your discipleship path, and you want to get them integrated into small groups. And so having them just show up is not the end goal. And there are a lot of people who believe if I have this building or if I have this hype around the ministry, then students are going to come to that automatically, and it's going to help the whole situation. Now, I'm not against buildings. I'm not against having an awesome space. I'm not against having hype. But the myth there is that that's all it takes, is that having those bells and whistles, whether it be in space or in your activities, is all it takes to have a growing and thriving ministry. It's just not the case. I can tell you from somebody who has served as a student pastor, and we have gone through building projects to build student facilities in 2 churches that I was in. It brings a lot of work and it brings a lot of distraction into the mix along with the good that it does bring. So yes, having a dedicated space that's amazing is really, really good. But if you're not careful, it can lead the ministry to be about that rather than about leading students to Jesus and seeing them discipled. It, man, having that thing can bring a ton of distraction.
Well, and it's not going to guarantee sustained growth.
That's right.
It probably will draw some extra hype. You know, the kids that you've got will be excited about it. They'll bring their friends. You'll have your grand opening, and 2 months after your grand opening, if you're not doing anything intentional as a part of that ministry, then your ministry is not going to be any bigger than it was.
Yeah.
And we see that all the time. Great churches with dedicated student centers that we know in the past have had 300-400 kids coming through the ministry that still have that great student center that, you know, are at 100 students.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about the facility. The facility is helpful, but I think that mindset makes you think that all the work that you need to do is done at your desk. That if I build these programs, if I put these things in place, then all of these kids are going to come to me. And that's not what pastoral ministry is about. It's about us going to reach the people. So the myth of you being able to do everything God's called you to do from behind your desk is a very dangerous one, because it convinces you that you don't need to step outside, out from behind your desk, to go get those students. And that's one of the most important pieces of ministry.
Yeah. And if it, just as a side note, if you're interviewing at a place that has a student ministry facility and you look at the job description and it's basically fill the building with students, have activities all the time at the building with students, and you can tell that all they're concerned about is using the facility that they put all this money into, run far and fast. That is not the place that you want to be. You can work at YMCA or a go-kart track and fill the building with people.
And that's a hard thing to hold to.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming from a ministry that does not have those kind of resources, then that may look really appealing to you. You know, man, they've got all this stuff. They want me to steward all of this stuff. But if from the top down, the focus is on events and driving attendance and nothing else, and your heart is bent toward discipleship as it should be, then there's going to be a miss in vision. There's going to be a miss in fulfillment as you're trying to execute what's in front of you.
Yeah, that's right. So the next myth is that more money equals more students. Bigger budget, more students. Myth number two of student ministry. And this one is widely held.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations John Paul and I have that centers on, man, if I just had more budget, if I just had more budget. It's a myth. More money does not equal more students.
And so this is one that I think maybe we can't give the blanket statement for, because you have to contextualize some of this. Some of you guys are on an absolute shoestring budget. You've got, I mean, my mentor in ministry, as a student pastor when I met him, had like $2,000 for the whole year in student ministry. Could he have reached a few more students if he had $5,000? You know, maybe so, because he's a super hard worker and would have put that extra $3,000 toward the right things. But that's the difference. If you're just banking on, oh man, if I just had more money, I could buy more things and that would bring more students, then that's not the right mindset. Just having more money in the bank isn't going to do it. Why? Because ministry equals relationships. And that's what this is about. Putting students into community with leaders that love them and are called to lead them in a process of discipleship. I mean, think about the Chinese church movement. You know, everyone meeting in house churches. They ain't got a big budget.
That's right. I think a friend of mine, Keith, who, and every time we talk about budget, he's somebody that's served at a church that where he had less than $5,000 in a student ministry budget, and he's served at churches where he had some of the largest budgets of student ministries anywhere, and excelled in student ministry in both situations. Led the state that he was in baptisms with a budget of $5,000.
Yeah.
And reached people, saw them come to know the Lord, discipled, has relationships with kids that were at that church even to this day. And it was, you know, we're talking 15 to 20 years ago. And so this for me, having more money in the budget gives you more opportunities to do more things, maybe to supplement the cost of camp down so more people can come to camp, or your retreat so that you can involve more students that may not be able to go. And then that gets them more involved in your ministry, right? So like you, I would agree, you can't make the blanket statement here, but more budget does not equal better student ministry.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Because of what you said, it's about the relationships and where your student ministry is going. I mean, in the words of the great theologian, notorious B.I.G., mo money, mo problems. Right? With mo money, even in a budget situation, comes mo problems. And so I would say maybe one of those problems that comes along with that is the leadership lid of stewardship and healthy budget management, which is something that we see people struggle with in student ministry from time to time, that there's not a lot of care for how the budget is managed. And so, you know, the thing that we've talked about in different environments before is the whole philosophy of, if I go over my budget, then I'm going to show them that I need more budget money next time around. When that's not a good strategy, it's really poor stewardship. And perhaps there's something that needs to be learned. If that's the approach, then perhaps there's something that you need to learn about stewardship before you're given more money.
Well, and I think a lot of times what that shows is laziness on the part of the student pastor. Because I think sometimes when there is a large enough budget, there's a tendency towards careless spending because it's not affecting you in the way that your personal budget might. So you overspend it intentionally. If you overspent your personal budget intentionally, you'd be in real trouble.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of times it just shows that someone isn't willing or able to get creative with what they have and be really savvy with the resources they've been given to be working toward relationship and not just buying things for the ministry.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to be sure and let you guys as the listening audience to this podcast know that, like, we don't talk about these things to get down on you or to make you think that we have a bad impression of student ministry leaders. We don't. We do this podcast because we love student ministry leaders and we care about you and your leadership. But the reality is that we've seen this as an issue continue to come up. And so this, we challenge you to take a different view and a different approach to how you manage your budget, because great ministry can be done on a shoestring budget. It does not have to be this big amount. It's just like your home finances. You're going to find a way to spend what you bring in, and you're always going to see things that you want that you don't have the money for, regardless of how much money you make. There's always going to be something there that you think, man, if I only had a little bit more money, I would do that. And I think that's where scripture's coming from when it says the love of money is the root of all evil. Is that if that becomes something that we love and always think we need more, then that's putting it into a place of idolatry, even in a ministry setting for us.
Yeah.
So the next myth Any help is good help. Any help is good help.
Help, help, help,
help, help, help. Talk about that one.
Man, that's a dangerous one because it is so tempting when you have so many areas of need in your ministry, and especially if you're someone who's really dreaming about, man, I want to get these things done. I want to move the next step. I want to be able to, you know, really fill out this, whatever, discipleship model that I've got going. You know, I need people to lead 25 more groups of 2 students so that we can, you know, push this cart up the hill and really see our students go deep. When you've got needs like that, or even just an event, you know, that you want to pull off, and you need 15 leaders to be able to help you pull those things off, a lot of times we can find ourselves just asking for anybody that will come help.
Yeah.
And that's when we get in trouble, when we're just asking anybody that's willing to come fill a spot. We often end up recruiting people that don't necessarily want to be there, or maybe they want to be there, but they just shouldn't be there for whatever reason. There's a lot of great, great people that have no business serving in student ministry.
Yeah.
You know, nothing against them. Not everybody's gift is student ministry.
That's right. I've heard you say the statement a lot of times before in settings where you're teaching on this topic of you recruit 80% of your own problems.
Right.
And
credit to Dr. Grant Etheridge.
Yeah, that's right. And man, that is one of the truest statements to go opposite of the myth of any help is good help. Like, I just need a warm body to fill a seat. If you student ministry leaders can write that on a note card and put it in your desk or on the top of your desk, or when you are in your season of recruiting, which should be right now because the motto of student ministry should be always be recruiting, don't stop that process. If you could remember that one statement, it will save you so much headache. It might look like the situation is dire right now and that you don't have enough people to do what you want to do, and God has given you this big vision and you just need more volunteers to execute it and make it happen. And so I'm just going to start throwing people in here, and that might look attractive in that moment, but I'm telling you, you get people who aren't on board with your vision, who, like John Paul said, aren't truly called to serve in student ministry and don't have the gifts that you're looking for, it's going to take you further away from the vision that God has called you to rather than help you accomplish it. You recruit 80% of your problems.
So this is a place that maybe you need to consider down the road, a year down the road, a year and a half down the road. What would it look like for you to be raising leaders that have gone through a process with you or someone else, some leaders that you trust, to be made ready, trained, and equipped to lead some of the environments that you've got in place? Instead of constantly, because this is where I think we find ourselves. We find ourselves constantly in need of a leader right now, but we may not have done something over the last year to begin to develop a pool of potential leaders. So what can you be doing to start to kind of create a farm system for new leaders? I'm not going to answer that question for you, but
yeah,
something for you to chew on.
Yeah, because that's a contextually based question. It's something that you have to take back and say, okay, what do I need? Who's around me? And how can I begin to foster that farm system or build that pool of people? All right, so the final myth that we're going to discuss, again, this isn't an exhaustive list. It's just 4 that we think are common in student ministry, common held beliefs that are actually false.
Right.
Hence, myths, right? So the 4th one is, it's okay to ask forgiveness instead of permission.
Oh,
do we need to have confession on this one? Because this is something that I believe I know that I have taken the approach of this before.
Yeah, if you're a rule breaker at heart like I am, this one hurts.
But it when we take this approach, we lose credibility with those who we serve under, with those who God has placed in authority over us, and potentially with people that we serve laterally with.
Well, and a lot of times it just contributes to the stereotypical idea that people have of student pastors, that they're lazy, unprepared, kind of shooting from the hip, flying by the seat of their pants. Because often when we say, oh, I'm just going to do it, you know, and I'll ask for forgiveness, that means you didn't plan for something more often than not.
Yeah.
You don't sit at the table and plan. You know, let's say you're planning your camp. You don't sit at the table and plan your camp a year ahead of time and write down the answer to all the questions that you have. Oh, we'll just ask for forgiveness. You plan it out and you figure out how it should be done. You do that when you're in a crunch and it's like, oh, I don't know what to do right now. I'm just going to do this.
Yeah. When you're in a crunch or when you just know this wouldn't be taken well, so I'm just going to do it anyway. And I'll face the consequences. Like, I believe this is going to be so great that whatever consequences are there will be overlooked.
Yeah.
That's a poor life choice. Like, can you think about, so like, we're okay to do that in ministry sometimes, but if you lived your life that way, it wouldn't go well.
No.
It would.
It's never gone well for me in ministry.
It would end in a wreck. And so, man, this is a credibility issue. I think it's an authority issue in a lot of ways. But John Paul's right, man. The planning side of this will keep you from being in this situation. And I think you should listen to the check in your spirit. If you're considering a decision through this model, the answer should just be no.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if this is the filter for anything, use it as the filter for, I'm just not going to do that, regardless of how awesome you think it might be. One of the areas I think about specifically with this is in campus ministry on school campuses. If you take this approach in ministry on public school campuses,
oh, man, you could burn the bridge immediately.
You're going to burn the bridge. And not just for your church, but for any church that ever wants to have any type of involvement on that campus. And there have been many who in student ministry past have made a decision with this framework and justified it with righteous, I'm going to reach these kids explanations. But in the end, were never allowed to come back on campus again, and no churches were allowed. And so the benefit of what you get in the short term, even by what you can justify through righteous language, doesn't outweigh the benefit that you could experience in the long term by planning and doing it the right way every step.
Yeah.
So these have been four myths of student ministry that we have discussed today. If you want to send in more myths of student ministry that you have heard or experienced along the way, we would love to hear those. You can send those to us at Ben Trueblood and at John Paul Basham on Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast today. Head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. We'd love to hear what you think, and it helps other people find student ministry content that you have been listening to today. Hit the subscribe button while you're there, and we'll see you next time.